Hello and welcome along to episode 6 of the Director's Box podcast. I'm Kev, and as always, I've got alongside me Craig Gill. Craig, can you believe it's our 6th episode already?
Has it been 6 already, Kevin? Goodness me, that's flown by, isn't it? Those last 5 weeks have flown by. And no, it's been a pleasure. I'm really enjoying doing these podcasts with you for Director's Box. And yeah, long may it continue.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got a packed show coming up this week. We are going to touch on the big news in the Premier League. Nottingham Forest lost 4 points on Monday. We'll assess how that changes the complex of things and also discuss whether it's right or wrong, actually, that Notts Forest punishment. Before we look at things more on the football pitch again, we'll have a look at the 4 quarterfinals of the FA Cup, 3 of which were absolutely brilliant, weren't they? We'll also look at the Welsh Derby, which we previewed in full last week. It's a big, big week for Wales, and we'll look at their chances of qualifying for Euro 2024, both on Thursday and hopefully next Tuesday as well, before we'll finish off the podcast with a little look at the National League, where it looks like one team is about to regain their Football League status. That is all to come. Let's start though with the big news of the week, Craig. Huge news for me, I have to say, because obviously my club's deeply affected by this. And that is the news on Monday that Nottingham Forest have been deducted 4 points. We all knew that they had charges hanging over them for the profit and sustainability rules. We didn't know exactly what the punishment would be. We kind of knew based on how Everton lost 6 points for the same reason earlier in the season, that it was going to be somewhere in a sort of 2-3 game ballparky kind of points tally. Turned out it was 6, but the commission gave Nottingham Forest 2 points back for being jolly good people and complying right the way through. So they ended up with a 4-point deduction. It took them from being 3 points above Luton Town after the two sides drew at Kenilworth Road in a dramatic late equaliser for Luton on Saturday to 1 point behind the Hatters with 9 games to play. So this is huge news at the bottom of the table. How did you sort of react to it initially, Craig?
Well, we all knew it was coming in some shape or form, Kevin, didn't we? But as far as I'm led to believe and the research I've done on it, I think Premier League clubs can lose 105 million over 3 seasons. So it's obviously £35 million per campaign. But I think Forest's loss was only permitted to be 61 million because they've only spent 2 years of that, or because they spent 2 years in the Championship. So obviously only 1 year in the Premier League at that time. So yeah, because they breached the threshold of 61 million by 34.5 million. That was up to 2022-23. Then obviously that then sees them breach that ruling.
Yeah, it does. You're absolutely right. It's £13 million a season in the EFL, £35 million a season over a 3-year period in the Premier League. So like you say, £61 million was the target that Nottingham Forest had, as opposed to Everton, who had £105 million. Of course, it's, strictly speaking, it's not losses of just £61 million over that time, is it? The Premier League give you £100 million at the start of the season when you compete. So effectively, you've got to lose a hell of a lot more than that £61 million to fall foul of these rules. And that is exactly what Nottingham Forest did. The big problem that they had is that when they got promoted from the Championship through the playoff final, they got promoted with an awful lot of loan signings. Those loan signings went back to their parent club. They chose not to make many of those full-time signings, and therefore they needed to sign what they believe was a whole new squad to be competitive in the league, or at least that's what they're going to paint the picture of. However, ultimately, to be competitive in the league in their eyes is to be in the top half of the table, whereas realistically all they needed to do was recruit to finish 17th and then keep on building in much the same way that a Brentford have done, or a Bournemouth have done, or a Brighton have done prior to that. They have ambitions above that though, and it seems that they went out, they spent an awful lot of money on an awful lot of players who really haven't contributed an awful lot to them, because ultimately they were still only 3 points above Luton after 29 games before this decision. And that's the problem here, I think, Craig. They've spent a lot of money, but they haven't spent it particularly wisely, and it's just come back to haunt them.
It appears that way, Kevin, doesn't it? Yeah. It you know, with given the signings that they've made, they've clearly massively over budgeted, and as a consequence, you know, they've fallen foul of the rules, and have been deducted points as a consequence. You know, I think the Premier League were going to dock them 8 points with a reduction to 6 points because the breach was sort of 77% larger than in Everton's case. But I think because they said it was obviously disproportionate, because obviously the Premier League would only dock you 9 points for insolvency. So, you know, I suppose they've got a case to a certain degree, but I think I agree with you. I think they massively over-budgeted and probably got it wrong as a consequence, and potentially are now going to pay the price. However, having said that, if they appeal, I'm led to believe, I stand to be corrected, but I'm led to believe the appeal process could go on beyond the end of the season. So we could get to the situation where the season could end, Nottingham Forest being in whatever position they're in, Luton being in whatever position they're in, and other clubs as well, of course, but not knowing at the end of the season who is actually going to go down until obviously the outcome of any appeal is known.
Yeah, that is the situation that we're in. I suspect that one of the reasons why the commission gave Nottingham Forest their 2 points back for good behaviour, so to speak, is because they've complied with everything. And they're trying not to lead them into an appeal, because obviously an appeal is just going to sort of delay everything again. If they don't appeal, then their punishment sticks. And we all know exactly where Nottingham Forest are in relation to everything else. However, it should be said, Nottingham Forest do have until Sunday to appeal the decision. They haven't actually given out any indication as of yet whether they intend to do that. Whereas if you contrast that to Everton, whose initial deduction was 10 points, of course, not 4 points. Immediately, they made their case to appeal. I think you're right to bring up the point that insolvency is only 9 points in the Premier League, Craig. I think this is partly an issue that they need to solve with regards to these rules going forward. I don't think that's enough of a punishment for a Premier League club to go insolvent. This is a Premier League that give you £100 million at the start of every single season. Each league position is worth the better part of £6 million to you. How you can go insolvent and only lose 9 points, and I understand that it's 38 games in the Premier League as opposed to 46 in the EFL, where it's 12 points for insolvency. The amount of sums that are going around for you to get into a situation where you're financially insolvent as a Premier League club, something has to go seriously, seriously wrong. So that 9-point deterrent is nowhere near strong enough for me. But because it's there, it means that these deterrents for breaking these sustainability rules can't really be any higher than that. So we're kind of into a situation now, and I'm not for 1 minute suggesting Nottingham Forest have done this, but we're in a situation now where a club like, let's say, for example, with wealthy owners of Newcastle or Chelsea or something like that, who've got a lot of money behind them, they break these financial rules, knowing that it seems that they're going to get somewhere between a 4 or a 6 point deduction, but they could build up enough of a bank of points where that means absolutely nothing to them. Say, for example, Chelsea got a 6 point deduction this season, it would mean nothing to them. And they get a squad off the back of it that long term will benefit them for a short term hit. And that can't really be the loophole in these rules that creates fair competition, can it?
No, and some would say that, you know, if you go into administration or insolvency, that it should result in automatic relegation, you know, because you've proven or disproven the fact that you are able to run an effective football club in the FA Premier League, or in that case, any league, really. So yes, should clubs be automatically relegated if they go into insolvency or administration? That's a question maybe for director's box, maybe a potential poll for users of the app to discuss, perhaps. But it would be a fair outcome for those owners who think they can bend the rules and get through the loopholes. But if they don't manage their finances and the football clubs correctly, then they face automatic promotion to the championship, relegation to the championship, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, I agree. I think the deterrent for financial mismanagement needs to be a lot stronger. I mean, obviously, I support a club that chased the dream 20-odd years ago and fell away because of it and ended up in non-league. And I fully agreed with the sanctions that were imposed in terms of the administrations and everything that Luton went through. And I think that that is the ultimate sort of failure, really. And, you know, losing football matches, that can happen. That can happen anytime. But being out of control with what you spend and how you run your business, which ultimately every football club is a business. I think that has to come with really, really strong deterrence. Just to conclude on the Nottingham Forest case, we should make out from their point of view that they fell foul of these rules because they chose not to sell Brandon Johnson for a lower price than what they eventually got for him. They eventually got £47 million for him from Tottenham September of this season. So September 2023, the last day of the transfer window or very late on in the transfer window. Whereas they had to sell him by the 30th of June last year in order for it to go by the sort of compliance of the financial year and everything else. They chose not to do that. They had an offer on the table from Brentford apparently for £30 million, which would have got them right up close to their sustainability allowances, but they wanted the extra money, which is fine. But by choosing the extra money, they've gone over and now they're falling foul of that. Another area where they could have done a little bit better is when they come into the Premier League, they spent the first 6 months without a shirt sponsor. I know from Luton's figures that shirt sponsorship can raise well into the tens of millions of pounds. And that's another thing that they could have used to bring their costs down a little bit. So they have just been mismanaged from top to bottom, really. They're chasing a dream. They're not doing it particularly well in terms of the players that they've signed and the money that they've spent, and they've paid the price. I suspect if everything had gone to plan for them and this spending had got them into the top half of the Premier League as it was meant to, this hit would be just taken and no one would say anything. They'd call it a slap on the wrist, class it as a slap on the wrist. But the fact that they haven't and they were fourth from bottom and it's now moved them into the relegation zone, it's kind of got them panicking. And they realise that basically they've not run it particularly well and need to sort of potentially appeal this to try and get themselves out of the bottom four. That's a bottom three, should I say, before we resume next Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? And as I said, as far as I'm aware with the appeal process, I think they said that the FA Premier League have said that the appeals process should conclude no later than, and if possible, before the 24th of May. But of course, that's only 5 days. That's 5 days after the season finishes. So going back to this appeal process again, you know, we will probably be in a situation if Forest decide to appeal that that will take place in the weeks after the end of the final league fixture.
Which really isn't good enough. And of course, we've still got a second Everton charge to be heard, the outcome of which is due, I believe, in the first couple of weeks of April. And again, if they have the same punishment and they appeal, we're in the same situation with two clubs and then sort of Luton and Burnley, to be fair, who gave themselves a shot in the arm at the weekend when they beat Brentford, not knowing where they stand or possibly where they stand. And it's not really good enough. I think we all agree with that. This needs to be in a much more timely fashion. And it's something that, ironically, Craig, in the week that an independent regulator bill was put through to government, it's something that an independent regulator needs to get control of very, very quickly.
Yes, of course, we've got this regulator being brought in. And of course, that was on the back of the Football Governance Bill, which was basically announced after the fan-led review into football in 2022, wasn't it? So yeah, it'll be interesting. Interesting that some people are for it and others are against. I've read that David Sullivan, West Ham United owner, says that the Premier League may not be the world's top division if an independent regulator is introduced, in so much that obviously some of that revenue, which is global as far as the FA Premier League market is concerned, and is vast, obviously, that money might be aggregated through to the English Football League clubs through financial distribution. So therefore, as a consequence, there might be less money then for the Premier League teams. So that'll be an interesting one to watch, obviously, and I'm sure this will run on, and it'll be interesting to see if and when the regulator is involved.
Yeah, like you say, that has passed through government now. So that is going to happen. There's no time frame on when it's going to happen. This government don't particularly move particularly quickly in anything that they do. So I'm not expecting it sort of immediately. But the main thing is that the bill is on the table and the plans are in place. And I understand from using a couple of contacts that a job advertisement will be out within the next couple of months. So the ball is rolling in that regard. And like you say, it'll be interesting to see how strong the powers that the independent regulator can have are, and just what they can do about this imbalance in the game. An awful lot of financial problems in this country, and having come through the leagues with Luton and being a board member of the Luton Supporters Trust, who are a shareholder in Luton Town, I kind of get an insight into the ins and outs of all this financial stuff, even though as a fan I don't really want it. An awful lot of financial mess in this country is because teams are chasing the dream, because the gap between the finances of the Premier League and even the top of the Championship are just way, way too vast. And it needs closing. And if it doesn't get closing, we're going to struggle to have 92 clubs in our pyramid for much longer, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's, you know, it still amazes me that, you know, we're able to field 92 professional football clubs, probably more so if you take into the professional full-time clubs in the National League as well, in such a small, you know, island as ours, really. But, you know, full credit to those that do maintain football clubs on a professional basis. Yeah, I think the whole piece about this really is, or certainly one of the main arguments for the regulator, is that the regulator may step in if the Premier League and EFL can't reach an agreement on how that Premier League money is distributed throughout the pyramid. So as a consequence, if the two parties can't agree, then I believe the regulator then has the authority then to resolve that issue. So that's going to be extremely interesting. And as you say, it could affect a lot of football clubs one way or the other.
Yeah, it's a huge time in English football at the moment off of the field. And we'll keep up to date with all of that. And as the news breaks and the stories develop, we will keep on talking about it on this podcast. But we are also an on-field issue football podcast, Craig. So let's turn our attention back to the football field, because we previewed the FA Cup quarterfinals in last week's episode, and we said we were looking forward to them. And they didn't disappoint, did they? We had three in particular absolute cracking quarterfinals. The other one, the Man City-Newcastle game, probably did go as everyone expected, with Man City far too good. But let's start with the real pick of them, which was Manchester United against Liverpool. An absolutely cracking game of football from start to finish. And one that kind of had a surprise ending, really, with Manchester United ending up 4-3 winners pretty much the last kick of the game. I think we both expected Liverpool to go through in the tie, but United equalised late on in normal time and then came from behind in extra time to win it. What did you make of that game?
Fantastic game of football, Kevin, wasn't it? You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and typical end-to-end, really. And as you say, Liverpool going into the game as massive favourites, certainly on current form. Manchester United, obviously, were there issue, shall we say, but full Manchester United, you know, took the game to Liverpool early on, obviously going 1-0 up through McTominay, and then really it was nip and tuck right the way through, wasn't it, really? And then, of course, as you say, Diallo coming up with that winner, was it 122nd minute, I think it was, and again, you know, it's you know, testament to Manchester United for the way they stuck in and came back to it. And I thought they played, the attacking game, counter-attacking game particularly well.
And what's interesting is those two meet again in 3 weeks in the Premier League. So it'll be interesting to see if that's had some sort of psychological effect on it. Obviously, this was cup football. Man United had nothing to lose in extra time, hence why Bruno Fernandes ended up being in the sort of quarterback position. And they went with sort of one defender with Antony at left back. And it was basically formations and everything out the window from Erik ten Hag by the end of it, wasn't it? It was just get as many men forward as is possible and try and win the game. I have to say the one thing about that quarterfinal, which I hated, and it's no slant on the referee who refereed the game absolutely brilliantly, but please let there be common sense that Diallo doesn't get sent off after scoring a goal in those situations. We've got to be better than that as football, haven't we? Just tick him off. Just tell him it can't be done for future, but leave him on the pitch, please.
Well, I'm just amazed that he'd forgotten that he'd been booked, to be honest. He'd forgotten that he'd got a red card, first of all. But then, yeah, if you look at the emotion of it all and the context of the game and scoring the winner, you know, with almost the last kick of the game, and, you know that surely football is about emotion, isn't it? And that's why we love it, and that's why we play it, we coach it, we support it, we spend a lot of money following it, either on TV or live in the stadiums. And yeah, I think if you take that emotion out of it, then we haven't got a game really, have we? But by the same token, you'd have to question. I understand why they might have brought that law in about removing your shirt, because obviously, you know, there could be. We've seen in the past, haven't we, players displaying slogans on T-shirts worn underneath the jersey. But, I think, should there be a rule review, first of all? That's the first thing. But you also say, well, can you celebrate without taking your shirt off? You know, that could be another argument as well, of course. But, I'm just amazed, really, that Diallo had forgotten that he'd got his first yellow card, first and foremost.
Yeah, that was pretty daft, to be fair to him. But like you say, you just get lost in the emotion of the moment, don't you? I mean, 2 weeks ago, we highlighted the AFC Wimbledon last-minute winner. It was very much similar scenes. And I had similar scenes last weekend at Crystal Palace when Luton equalised in the last minute. And okay, Luton player didn't take his shirt off, but he was straight into the away end. And, that's what we pay our money for, for those moments, those special moments, to share it with the players. Had he have gone and celebrated in front of the Liverpool fans, that would have been completely different. Therefore, I would have been calling for him to get his yellow card and everything else. But he didn't. He celebrated with his own fans down the other end to where the Liverpool fans were. And you could even see in the referee's face he didn't want to send him off. But if he doesn't send him off, he probably doesn't referee in the Premier League next weekend. So he has no real choice. And he just left not a sour taste, because I still enjoyed the game. I loved the game, but it was just one of those old football, please help yourself kind of moments but absolutely fantastic game of football. And actually we had an equally good game of football earlier in the day when Chelsea played Leicester at Stamford Bridge. This one looked like being one-way traffic in the first half, Craig. Chelsea moved into a very comfortable 2-0 lead. They missed a penalty as well. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Leicester have equalised. Bit of help from Chelsea with the first goal, a disastrous own goal from De Zerzi. But in the end, Chelsea proved too strong.
Yeah, Chelsea 2-0 up at half time, you said. Leicester equalising then in the 62nd minute. And then, of course, then Chelsea then, coming in late with the two late goals, 92nd and 98th minute. So, another great game. A game which you probably thought Chelsea might be more dominant, but of course, they were in the first half. But Leicester have had a great season as well in the Championship, and they've shown some great form as well. So full credit to them for bringing it back, and then Chelsea taking it very late again. So late goals being the order of the day, I think, Kevin.
They really were, yeah. Stefan Mavididi's goal, the equalising goal in that game, was absolutely lovely. And then Madueke's goal that just put the icing on the cake for Chelsea was equally as good. But we weren't done with the last minute or late goals, Craig. We'll skip the Man City-Newcastle game for a moment. We will come on to that. But it all started in late fashion, didn't it, at Molineux with Wolves against Coventry. And yet another fantastic game of football. And we kind of alluded to the fact that it might be much better than it may have looked on paper when we previewed the game. And so it was, because Coventry really should have been at least a goal, if not two, ahead at half time. But they just couldn't finish their dinner in that first half. But they did take the lead, only to see Wolves come back and lead 2-1 quite late on. And then very, 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 very deep into injury time, Coventry turned it around. They levelled in the 97th minute. They scored the winner in the 100th minute. The scenes in the away end on the television screen were exactly like they should be. It was just another absolutely cracking game of football.
Fantastic. Great game of football. And, you know, I think if you're Gary O'Neill and you're 1-0 down with what, probably about, I think it was the 83rd minute, I think they got their first goal. You know, you're thinking, great, you know, we've at least got, we can take this further. And then, of course, they scored the second 5 minutes later in the 88th minute. You know, you're thinking, you're hoping, certainly not thinking, because we know how games can pan out, especially with all the added extra time, which we've discussed in previous issues. You know, 2-1 up with two goals in 5 minutes, the 88th minute being the second goal, you probably think you've done enough. But I mean, fair play to Coventry. You know, they've come back. They've really taken the game back again, obviously, I'd expect, in a one-off cup tie. Taking the game back to Wolves again. Sims has got his second in the 97th minute. And then Wright came up with a winner in the 100th minute. So what a finish. What a finish to a game. You know, four goals in the last, 15 minutes or so. And of course, two of those being in added time.
Yeah, once again, the only downside to an absolute brilliant game of football is Casey Palmer gets booked for celebrating. He's been substituted by this point. He runs across the pitch to get to his teammates who are in front of the away end when the winning goal goes in, and the referee books him. That means that was his second yellow card in the competition. He is now going to miss the semi-final against Manchester United. And again, he doesn't need to be booked. Just let them celebrate and deal with it in the dressing room. Just to point out that it's not right. But these are 100th minute goals for us in this situation, for a second tier club who've just booked their way to Wembley. There's no way back for Wolves. You could tell they were flat on their backs. They knew that they just conceded the winner. You just can't expect human beings to control their emotions of something that means so much at that time. Really, please, just don't book him. Just tap him on the shoulder and say, oi, cut it out. Don't do it again. Because he's got to miss a semi-final now, Craig, and it just doesn't seem right.
Well, it's the law again, Kevin, isn't it? And that's what the officials will point to. And we've seen it with the handball law. We discussed that in previous editions of this podcast as well. You know, it's the laws are written obviously for reasons. But it seems to me that, you know, I would say at least, I don't know, 80% of the time, common sense just goes out the window, really. And this is another classic example of that, as we mentioned in the Manchester United game with Diallo. So I don't know, is this something that has got to be reviewed by the lawmakers, you know, by the IFAB? You'd certainly like to think so, wouldn't you? And again, the handball law, you know, surely that's got to be reviewed as well. But we're talking about celebrations, we're talking about picking up yellow cards for that. And it does, you know, I mean, that, you know, for that player, you know, it could be the only time that he gets to play at Wembley, you know, and he's going to miss out on that now because he celebrated with his teammates, as you say, with a 110th minute winner.
Yeah, my heart really does go out to Casey Palmer there. I don't think anyone from Wolves, I don't think there was a Wolves fan or anyone that particularly cared that he got booked because he was celebrating. No one would have called for it. They'd have been perfectly happy had he not have been. Like you say, it's the law. The referee, again, has got to book him. But we just need this changing. You know, we go to football to be emotional. It is emotional. If you didn't have emotions, you wouldn't have half of the spectators in the ground. You wouldn't have half the passion. You wouldn't have half the interest in the game. So please, IFAB, sort that out. That is an absolute mess. We'll just quickly touch on the last one, Craig. We thought Man City would be too good for Newcastle. They weren't at their vintage best, but there was no Kevin De Bruyne in the game anyway. But they were pretty comfortable winners, and they move on in their quest for the treble.
Yeah, as I said, I think this one went according to most people's expectations, Kevin, with a Manchester City win. It was a fairly comfortable 2-0, I think, in the end, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. A couple of deflected goals probably, yeah, soured the taste for Newcastle a little bit further, but Man City were, they were in control, and if they needed to score more, you kind of got the feeling that they would do. So we've now got FA Cup semi-finals next month of Coventry City against Manchester United and Chelsea against Manchester City, and we will look ahead to those when they come along. But the one thing I will say from this weekend, Craig, they keep on saying, don't they, people in the media and everything, that the FA Cup's lost its magic. Well, I'll show you those three quarterfinals and ask you to tell me that the FA Cup's lost its magic, because it was there in plenty of proportions this weekend.
For sure. And it's, you know, it's they call it the magic of the cup, don't they? And, you know, I think we saw that in certainly three of those four games, as you said. And, yeah, you ask any Coventry City fan if, you know, if the magic's gone out in the FA Cup, and I'm sure they'll tell you otherwise.
Absolutely. And if they don't, they should do, because, yeah, Coventry City at Wembley are two games away from winning the FA Cup now, albeit two very, very tough ones. As I say, we'll look ahead to those semi-finals next month when they come along. But they weren't the only games that caught your fancy over the weekend, Craig, because the Welsh Derby was played out. We said last week that it was a game that was very close to your heart, and it went the right way for you as well, with Swansea winning 2-0. Pretty much from what I've seen, and I've only seen the highlights because I was on my way to the Luton game when this game was being played, but I saw that Swansea took the lead relatively early on in the game, and I knew that they'd missed a penalty. But thankfully, that didn't come back to haunt them from Swansea's persuasion, and they went on and wrapped it up in injury time to ease their relegation concerns and also stick a dent in Cardiff's promotion challenge.
Yes, I did watch this one live, actually, because it, you know, obviously with the time difference here in Central Time in the US, I was able to watch that one at 7:30 a.m. So I was up for an early breakfast and sat and watched that one with great interest, obviously. And yeah, Swansea basically came out of the traps, you know, all guns blazing, starting with a really, really high press, which was led by Liam Cullen at the top end of the pitch, obviously. And the whole team pressed with great intensity. But then that was tempered then with their good control of the ball in possession. And obviously by controlling the ball, they controlled the game as well and took the deserved lead through Liam Cullen. That was in the 34th minute. And really, in the first half, there was only one team in it, quite frankly. There was potential for a sending off for Mita for an altercation with Darling, where his head appeared to hit Darling's head, but Darling went to ground, but the referee decided that a yellow card was enough. I think if that happens in probably 99.9% of any other game, anywhere in the world, that's classed as a red card, but the referee saw fit for it only to be yellow. And then I must admit, at half-time, I thought, right, okay, Cardiff are going to go in now, and they, you know, they're going to understand the intensity of this game and match Swansea for that and maybe press Swansea hard, because Swansea were typically playing the Swansea way, like to play out from the back and play through the thirds, play through midfield. And dominate the football. So I thought that Cardiff might come out now and really press them to stop them controlling the ball and controlling the game as much as they had in the first half. But that never came. And so it's more the same from Swansea, really. They did miss a penalty. Liam Cullen, unfortunately, sent the goalkeeper the wrong way, but then unfortunately put it wide of the left-hand upright. So it stayed 1-0 until really late in the game. Swansea, for all their pressing and their intensity defensively, they sort of they tired, as you'd expect, really, because no team, not even Liverpool, can maintain a high press for a full 90 minutes, I'm sure, just the physicality of it alone. So I think they probably, in the last 10, 15 minutes, they went into more of a mid-block. I wouldn't say a low block, but certainly a mid-block. And Cardiff enjoyed a little bit more of the ball, but quite frankly, didn't really look like scoring. And Jamal Lowe came off the bench and the winner, almost with the last kick again, in the 96th minute. So, yeah, a well-deserved victory for Swansea. Surprising that Cardiff, and it might have been through injury, Aaron Ramsey, I think, has just come back. So he's been called into the Welsh squad, obviously, with all his experience and, of course, with him being national team captain. But I think they seem to lack his quality. And Callum O'Dowda was another one who came off the bench, and Reuben Caldwell. And I think when they came on, they showed qualities which perhaps the players that started didn't have, and as a consequence, struggled in possession against Swansea's high press.
Yeah, it was. The bits that I saw in the first half, it was one side kind of knew that it was a derby. The other side was kind of just getting used to the sort of intensity of it. I mean, there were a couple of Greek players in that Cardiff side, weren't there, to start off with, and an awful lot of English players probably don't really appreciate the sort of intensity of that game. Like you say, it was no surprise that Cardiff improved when Welsh players came on, but really and truly, they were comfortably beaten. They're now 8 points off the playoffs, and they've got a seriously negative goal difference compared to those that are around the playoffs. So you could call it 9 points with just 8 games left. That was a hammer blow to their hopes of reaching the Premier League. Whereas Swansea, great win for them. They've seen teams below them lose as well. And they're probably only another win or two away from guaranteeing championship football again next season and building something under Luke Williams, who is starting to really impress as Swansea coach.
Yeah, yes. And I think the week leading up to the Derby game, I think Luke Williams was instrumental in building that sort of atmosphere and camaraderie, not only amongst the squad, but I think the community as well and within the fan base. He obviously he was assistant to Russell Martin, and has sort of experienced the Derby game previously and won that as well. Obviously, when Russell Martin was there, they did the double double over Cardiff, the first time that a double's ever been done in that Derby game over 100 years, and so he clearly gets it. He gets the South Wales Derby, and he understands what it means to the fan base and the local community. So he's really bought into that. And I think before the game, I think he brought the club chef in to explain to the players, if anybody was any doubt, what the Derby meant to the people there and the fan base. And and certainly, you know, whether that had an effect or not, you know, as I said, Swansea certainly came out and played with great intensity, certainly for the first half, and as I said, probably for long periods of the second half as well. And as a consequence, you think that, you know, the way Luke Williams has brought the Swansea way back, which is, as I said, it's a footballing way of playing. It's, you know, it's enjoying the ball and progressing the ball with control, but passing with a purpose and creating good opportunities and taking those opportunities in the final third. That, you know, with his, you know, with his coaching staff, with Ryan and George as well, who've come in, done a great job in turning around what was, a fairly more pragmatic approach by Michael Duff earlier on season. And I'm hoping that, you know, from a Swansea perspective, that, you know, they can get back now with funds in the summer to make necessary signings to make a difference to the squad and hopefully take the Swansea way a little bit closer to playoffs, if not promotion, next season.
Yeah, it could well be a team to watch over the next sort of 12, 15 months. Swansea, Luke Williams got Notts County out of the National League, and that is a hard league to get a team out of. So very much cut his coaching cloth and reaping the rewards with Swansea. It must be a Welsh thing that, by the way, Craig, bringing legends in to understand the derby, because when Luton played Watford last season, Rob Edwards brought Mick Harford, of all people. There is no bigger Luton legend than Mick Harford, into the dressing room to tell the players exactly what that game meant. Luton were ahead after about 5 minutes of the derby. Never looked back. And, very, very reminiscent of that South Wales derby. So, very, very clever from Luke Williams to do that. And, Swansea, absolutely worthy winners of that game. So it was a big weekend for Welsh football just gone, Craig. And it's an even bigger week for Welsh football to come, because here we are in an international break. England have got a couple of friendlies, having already qualified for the Euros, but Wales, they need to do their job in competitive action to try and get through to Euro 2024. Thursday evening, they take on Finland in what I suppose we can call a semi-final, with the winners progressing to take on either Poland or Estonia in what would be the final. as in the winners of that game will go to Euro 2024. That second game, if Wales beat Finland, will be on Tuesday night. And two huge games. Obviously, Wales came through the playoffs to qualify for the World Cup last year. Sorry, 2 years ago. And so they've got good experience of it. They've got home advantage, which I think is key. Finland are a tough nut to crack. They don't concede too many goals, but on the flip side of that, they don't score too many either. How's your feeling for Wales going into these two games, or what we hope will be two games?
Well, I think it's a huge advantage playing at home, obviously, you know, in front of a no doubt very vociferous, passionate Welsh crowd, you know, because you know, when that red wall gets in full voice, you know, it really is a sight to behold, and it must surely lift the players. You know, it's a massive advantage, I think. Finland will be a tough nut to crack, as you said. Wes Burns has pulled out, Ipswich Town winger, he's pulled out through hamstring injury. Ben Kambango, Swansea City centre-back, he pulled out with a calf injury. And I think also that Joe Lowe has also withdrawn, defender has withdrawn as well through injury as well. Aaron Ramsey's coming back, obviously back into the fold, as I mentioned earlier when we talked about the Swansea-Cardiff game. But of course, he wouldn't have many game minutes under his belt. He did come off the bench for Cardiff, but that was very late on. But of course, he's going to be an instrumental figure in and around the dressing room, and hopefully he'll have an impact on the field as well. So yeah, it is going to be a tough nut to crack in Finland. But I can see Wales edging it. And then, as you say, then that sets up the final playoff game, hopefully, then against either Poland or Estonia.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned influential figures. I'm led to believe that Tom Lockyer is in and around the Welsh camp for this first game, at least. They've not confirmed yet whether he'll hang around should Wales win the game. But obviously, he was a part of the earlier sort of qualifying, and we all know what happened to him with his cardiac arrest. And if he boosts Wales in any way, shape or form to the levels he's boosted Luton when he's been around the Luton camp, then that will certainly be a help. There are some players in this Finland side that are sort of well recognised. I think everyone knows Teemu Pukki by now. He's now playing in the MLS for Minnesota United, already scoring goals for them. Glenn Kamara is having a brilliant season in midfield for Leeds United. And of course, the goalkeeper, Lucas Radecki, well, he hasn't lost a game yet this season, has he, for Bayer Leverkusen? So there's an experienced spine in this Finland outfit. But you would imagine if Wales can stay strong defensively, they've got the pace sort of through Brennan Johnson and one or two others, and the aerial threat of Kiefer Moore that should get them over the line in a... I don't think this is going to be a walk in the park game. This is going to be a sort of tight, maybe 1-0 win somewhere along the line. But you'd like to think Wales have got the quality to get the job done.
Yeah, I think so. I think the attacking threat, as you said, of Brennan Johnson on one flank and probably Dan James on the other. Kiefer Moore with his aerial threat, and he is a great link player. I think I don't think we started the game against the USA, I think, in the World Cup, with a recognised number nine in the first half. That certainly showed. So it's good to have Kiefer Moore in there as a focal point, if you like, you know, as a link player, and then of course then with both quick wingers providing the supply from the flanks, you'd like to think we'd be successful potentially in those areas as well. So yeah, I think it is going to be really tight, and it might be the odd goal that takes it, you know. But I'm sure all Welsh fans all over the world will take that to be in the playoff final on Tuesday.
Some really interesting battles in that game, not least in the centre of midfield. Ethan Ampadu against Glenn Kamara, as I say, they're both Leeds United teammates. Probably whoever comes out in that battle will lead their side further up the pitch. And the good thing, of course, Kiefer Moore, he's now playing regularly for Ipswich, isn't he? Whereas he's only been a bit part player for Bournemouth in the past. So he goes into the game in good goal scoring form. And hopefully that pays dividends. It looks like the playoff final, should Wales get there, will be against Poland. It's hard to believe that Poland get beaten by Estonia. I know this is football and anything can happen, but the gulf between Polish football and Estonian football, with no disrespect to Estonia, is vast. So if Wales are going to qualify for the Euros, it would imagine they're going to have to go through Poland on Tuesday night, obviously with Robert Lewandowski up front for the Poles and some decent support acts as well. That one will be another tough game, but again, home advantage could be crucial.
Yeah, I think it will be, as I said earlier, and I think Poland, you know, I think Poland will have too much for Estonia, with the greatest respect. And I think that, yeah, that's you know, that's another massive test for Wales. And you know, people have said, oh, you know, we've opened it up now to more teams to get through into the Euro finals. You know, is it unfair? Is it sort of, you know, cheating the system a little bit? Well, if Wales have got to beat Finland, and then, you know, 4 days later, 5 days later, have to go and beat you know, a good Polish side to get to the finals, then they've more than earned their ticket. But again, another fascinating game, and with the home crowd, you know, albeit Lewandowski playing for Poland and all his colleagues, you'd like to think that Wales would have enough.
Yeah, and of course the reward for the winner of that playoff section is a Euro 2024 group with France, Netherlands and Austria, so it certainly won't get any easier. And you're right, I mean, people do say that nonsense about opening it up, but ask Norwegians, it's still not easy. There will be no Norway at Euro 2024. They've not even made the playoffs to get there. I wish Wales all the best. All of our Welsh listeners, hope that you're celebrating come Tuesday night. Before we end, Craig, we will just take a look at the National League, like we said we were going to last week. Interestingly, this Saturday is non-league day. So if you support a Premier League club or a Championship club or even a League One club who's not got a game this weekend because they've got too many internationals, if you want to check out a game of football, go and see your local non-league team. Most of them, I've looked on their non-league day website, nonleagueday.co.uk, are offering sort of discounted tickets to season ticket holders of their sort of nearby club. So you'll get in for a sort of smallish amount. You can enjoy the games of football, particularly if it's lower than the national leagues. You'll also be able to sort of get a drink from the bar and watch the game with a beer in your hand and things like that. It's just a whole different experience. It's well worth doing. If you've not seen a non-league game before, they're perfectly good games to go and watch. They're competitive. Everyone will be eager to win and things like that. But it's just a much more relaxed sort of atmosphere. And also, you would be doing grassroots football a real favour. Every sort of penny helps at that level. So head to nonleagueday.co.uk to find out where your local non-league club is and whether they're at home or away and which games that you want to go to. That would be good. But let's just focus on the National League. Craig, we're recording this podcast on Wednesday. That will be out to you on Thursday. So there may be a chance that by the time you listen to this, Chesterfield have already won the National League. Whether they win it against Halifax on Wednesday or not, though, Craig, Chesterfield are going to be back in the Football League next season.
Without a doubt. Absolutely. That's what we said. There's always doubts in football, but I think one thing's assured is that Chesterfield are going to be playing Football League next season. 92 points after 39 games, Barnet. 71 points after 39 games. So massive 21 point difference there between the two. 7 games remaining. Barnet won on Tuesday night. So had they lost, then Chesterfield would have been promoted. But of course, with that Barnet win, it does keep things alive. But I'm sure it won't be for much longer. And Chesterfield will rightly take their place back in the Football League.
Indeed, yeah. Paul Cook done a brilliant job at Chesterfield. They're not just going to win the conference, or sorry, National League as it's called now. They're going to go beyond 100 points. They're already on 95 goals with 7 games left. They're going to go beyond 100 goals. They are the very definition of having dominated that league. But there is a decent race to follow them up, Craig. And the one thing I like about the National League, they've extended their playoffs a few years ago, so you can go right the way down to 7th now. You do have an advantage if you finish 2nd or 3rd. You bypass what would be called the quarterfinals. You go straight into the semi-finals, and then 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th battle it out in the quarterfinals to face either 2nd or 3rd in the semi-final. So at the moment, as you just alluded to, we've got Barnet in 2nd, 71 points, 39 games played. We've got Bromley, who also play on Wednesday night. So ahead of that game, they're on 67 points, 38 games played. So Wednesday night's their game in hand. They could move to within a point of Barnet, but more importantly, they would move 5 points clear of 4th place. Solihull Moors, who are having another excellent season, they're on 65 points, 39 played. Aldershot on 63 in 5th, 39 played, 63 points. 2 more points down to Altrincham, 61, again with 39 games played. And then you have Gateshead, who are occupying the last of the spots in the playoffs, and they have a game in hand, and they're on 60 points. And you have Oldham, huge football club who've actually graced the Premier League. They're in eighth. Halifax are in ninth. So it's a big game for them against Chesterfield on Wednesday night. They're both on 59, so a point off the playoffs. And then you've got a bit of a gap to Rochdale, who are eight adrift of Gateshead and probably running out of games. So it's a really congested sort of second to ninth in the National League, Craig, and all so much to play for. And as we said a few weeks ago on the podcast, this is what the playoffs bring. It keeps the season alive for so many teams.
It does, doesn't it? And I think it's I think it was a great introduction all those years ago, and it does certainly keep the season alive for certainly for mid-table teams. You know, we've shown in previous episodes, you know, how tight it is in the Championship, for example. I think with the National League, it's a little bit closer, in so much that, as you said, from second down to ninth, but really, or maybe realistically, for those four second, that second playoff tier of four teams, probably from fourth down to ninth. So we've probably got six teams involved in that for a four team playoff. And then, of course, you've got second and third, as you said, Barnet and Bromley currently occupying those positions. But no, I think, Halifax have got a game in hand, of course, in ninth position. So they're on 59 points with 38 games played. So they've got a game in hand over Oldham. So they could leapfrog them and actually go into seventh place above Gateshead as well. Gateshead have got a game in hand. So they're on 38 games and 60 points. So they could then... With a much superior goal difference, they've got a plus 18 goal difference. Aldershot in fifth, they've got a minus one, so they could go up to fifth, potentially, Gateshead, with a win in the next, with the game in hand. So, yeah, it's going to be tight again. And, another league to keep an eye on. And, it just adds the excitement to the end of the season, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And they're all one-leg knockout playoff games in the National League. None of this two-leg semi-final nonsense. It's the jeopardy is real when you get to the playoffs, and you see some absolutely barnstorming games in those National League playoffs. Season before last, I remember Wrexham played Grimsby, and Grimsby won 5-4 after extra time. It was an absolute mad game of football, and I'm sure we'll get no different when the playoffs come around this time. At the other end of the table, Craig, it is even more congested. You have Oxford City have gone. They're on 29 points. They're pretty much down. It's not mathematically secure yet, but they're 15 points adrift of safety with six games left. So much like Chesterfield are going up, Oxford City are going down. But then above them, from 23rd up to 12th, you've got 11 teams that are separated by just 7 points. So you've got Dorking and Kidderminster on 42, York on 43 in their first season back in the league. Boreham Wood, who've been a mainstay of the playoffs recently, they're teetering on the edge of falling out of the division the other way. They're on 44. Maidenhead on 45. Eastleigh, Fylde and Wealdstone, who have got a barrel load of games in hand, on 46. Ebbsfleet and Woking on 47. So they're just 4 points above York in the battle to beat the drop. Hartlepool, another big club in this division, 48 points, also with some games in hand. And then Dagenham and Redbridge, 49. So, as I say, 11 teams for three relegation spots. And those teams need to win. Credit to Ebbsfleet and Woking. They've won four of their last five. They've got themselves away from trouble. But the likes of Boreham Wood, who've lost their last three, they need to turn that round very, very quickly.
Yeah, again, fascinating battle at the bottom of the division as well, as you said. And you know, almost as close as the Championship, really. It's going to be one to keep an eye on. And it only takes one team to have a run of, you know, two, three, four results to get themselves out of it. And by the same token, you know, if you find yourself in a bit of a sticky spot and not picking up points, you can be in real trouble. So, again, one to keep an eye on. And I'll be certainly watching it from afar as well.
Me too. That league does have TV coverage in the UK, actually. And over the next week or so, there are quite a few games. As I say, non-league day on Saturday as well. So I'll probably spend some of my international break watching that. I don't really have an awful lot of interest in England's two friendlies, particularly as Ross Barkley hasn't been called up. I will save that until another day, though, that particular gripe. Craig, because we are running out of time, just before we go from this episode of the podcast, I want to wish the very best of luck to Newcastle United Ladies and Hashtag United Ladies. They compete at Kenilworth Road on Saturday for the Women's National League Cup final. Huge game. I believe that they're already close to selling 5,000 tickets to that game, Craig, so that's an absolutely fantastic effort. I will be at this game because my nieces want to go and watch some women's football at Kenilworth Road, so I will take this game in on Saturday afternoon. And we've already mentioned when we had Rhiannon on earlier on in the season, how Newcastle are going to be most likely in the Championship next season. Hashtag are still trying to chase down Portsmouth to get into the Championship. So the two clubs having great seasons, playing out for a cup on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'd like to wish my good friend Tony Dunn, who's the physio of Newcastle United Women, all the very best for that one. And of course, in the promotion quest as well. But Tony has been a stalwart of military football for decades, and if anybody deserves success, it's him. And I wish him and Newcastle United Women all the very best for the weekend.
Best of luck to both of those two teams. I will report back on how the game is in next week's podcast. As I say, my nieces want to go and watch some women's football, so I'm more than happy to get them involved in that. And looking forward to a good game and seeing a cup one. And final thing before we go, we are going to introduce a weekly poll on the Director's Box app in line with the podcast. And this week's one is going to be who should be the player of the season in the Premier League. If you go back a couple of episodes, myself and Craig discussed this. We both put forward Phil Foden as an option. Craig was quite keen on Martin Odegaard as well, and I flagged up the exploits of Virgil van Dijk. All four are going to be options in that poll. There are six other options, so head to the app, make your selection, and we will report back with the results in next week's podcast. It'll be very interesting to see who the people out there think is their player of the season, Craig.
Yeah, it is, and we had a good discussion, I think, didn't we? And I think we both agreed that Phil Foden would feature heavily. But it'll be interesting to see what the users of Director's Box come up with and how that poll stands at the end of it.
Yep, it will. As I say, head to the app, find that vote, make your selection, and we will reveal the winners next week. That is it for episode 6 of the podcast. Slightly longer than the usual ones, but there were two really key subjects that we had to discuss in a little bit more detail than what we normally would do. So, and obviously we've got an international break and everything anyway, so we apologise not for running a little bit longer, but we will keep them a bit shorter in future. Craig, thanks for your thoughts, Craig, particularly in light of the financial situation in football and, of course, Wales. Over the next week or so, we really, really wish them well. Thanks for your company, mate, and well, I'll see you next week.
Thanks very much, Kevin. Have a great weekend, everybody, and enjoy your football.
Thanks for listening. As I say, if you can get to a non-league game this weekend, please do. All the non-league clubs are grateful for any little help that they can get. If you do watch game football, enjoy it, but be respectful to those around you. And myself and Craig will be back next week. So thanks for listening, and goodbye.